Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. It's yet another Monday, and so it's yet another Edwin. Hi Edwin, how are you going?
Well, not getting enough sleep, Martin. Not getting enough sleep. The three amigos, they wake up at 5:30 in the morning. You know, what the hell's going on? I mean, I rescued
them. Well, if you will get roosters, what do you expect?
I mean, I thought they came with a digital keypad or something where you could program the program when they start. Yeah, I was hoping the 6:30, fine, but 5:30 in the morning. I mean, I rescued them. My mate was going to send them away to a chopping block because his next door neighbour was complaining about the roosters and he didn't want the council around, so I took them on. But you know what? That chicken soup's starting to look pretty, pretty good.
Well, I reckon that dogs could also do with an off switch as well, right? That would be very nice if they could be switched off from barking at certain hours. But no, unfortunately, animals have a life of their own, when the light comes on, guess what? Time to get up, time to make a fuss.
Well, that's right. Well, I'll get a lot healthier. I can't sleep in anymore, so I've got no choice but to get up and before the sun rises, and then I might as well go out and just punch the bag or kick the bag, and I'll get healthier by the end of the year, I guess. So the family keeps growing. Dusty and Evan, they're really happy with their the three amigos, and they're sharing the corn, as I've sent you the videos there. Fresh off the garden, Martin.
They loved it. It looks as though they did, and boy, were they going out at hammer and tongs. It's very good. So
a lot of people are asking why three roosters and no chickens. I inherited. I honestly did rescue them. So and they tell me the ratio for roosters to chicken is 5 to 1. So now I have to go and get 15, 20 chickens or so in order to keep them happy. Otherwise there'll be mayhem. But the DA for the high rise chicken coop hasn't come through council as yet. I put one too many basements for storage. I'll have to redraw it or something. But I'm on the clock here with the little brothers and to help out the labourers. They're very hard to come by. But look, that's it. On a real note, in reality, they're getting more and more expensive by the week. The tradies. So unfortunately, and although there's a lot of kerfuffle with the major developers. And there's a lot of tradies that are being displaced and they won't be getting paid. You probably know that a lot of their invoices went from 30 to 60 days to 90, 120, and in some cases 150 days, Martin. So a lot of these big companies are taking the small players out, and unfortunately a lot of them are losing the shirts off their back, basically everything as well. That's the unfortunate side of things. So things are only going to get more and more expensive.
Well, certainly the surveys for SMEs that I run has highlighted the extended cash flow pressure that a lot of those traders are under now. It's getting them a lot longer to get paid, if they're getting paid at all. Of course, the one exception are the tax people, GST. They don't give you any leeway at all.
No, they don't. They don't. But at the end of the day, the unfortunate thing is you do find out that the tax office is an unsecured creditor now, but and they've got to sit in there with if a company or business goes bankrupt, they basically sit in there with all the unsecured creditors. Nevertheless, it's a shame to see so many, and to hear and to know and walk closely with people that are losing their shirts off their backs, and also the tools of the trade, which is regrettable. A lot of them weren't quick enough to take the tools from the sites and machinery, all sorts of things. The places just got locked up and the no-go zone. But outside of that, as you were saying, all the other SMEs that you survey and all the businesses that literally Yeah, the commercial leases, it's not like a residential lease where you've got notices and all this sort of stuff. I mean, the leasing agent can just go there and put a lock, put new locks on the doors, and that's it. You can whistle Dixie and then fight it out in the courts. But it's, yeah, the chasm between the haves and the have-nots continues to get broader, bigger, and deeper, Martin. It's really a shame, and it seems only the politicians, the cronies, and the public servants are getting pay rises, and they feel safe at home, and they can continue to mandate all this sort of BS that they put on us, because they're sitting pretty, sitting sweet with the ongoing incomes, and everybody else that's trying to run a business seems to be, affected. And if you can't, a lot of them are just dog peddling. Let alone trying to swim out of this, it's just dog paddle and with anchors tied to your ankles.
Exactly right. And then, of course, we have the odd natural disaster, the floods and the costs of building again after the floods. And it's interesting that they've announced more support for the East Coast. I think that people haven't understood this quantum that we're talking about here in terms of just the numbers of people who've lost their properties, the numbers of people that are potentially going to have to rebuild or get bought out. And of course, all of that is going to put huge additional pressure on the construction sector and on materials and resources. And for me, one of the interesting questions is whether, in fact, it's really going to be sensible to rebuild where they were flooded.
Big this problem. Is the thing. Yeah, this is the thing, Martin. This is what you and I have been talking about, and how long have we been talking about for quite a number of years as to how the local councils have got a lot to answer for. The local mayors have got a lot to answer for, and the planning divisions, the planning departments have got a lot to answer for, and they've got to be taken to task. These bastards sit in the rifle tower and taking on the fees and taking on the council contributions and feathering their nests and having their little shindigs and parties with developers and the building industry and the construction industry and everybody else that they. That they pander to or they answer to. And the unfortunate thing that a lot of people don't understand, Martin, is that from the time that a lot of these homes were built to now, the regulations and the standard of construction has changed. Yep. They're totally different. You can't build in a lot of these places that you find in, if you recall, in the previous fires in the mountains south. Towards your way, and beyond all the fires that ravaged the East Coast. I mean, now try to build the same house, within that budget or a reasonable budget, you won't be able to. For starters, you won't even be able to get permission to build it. Or the building envelopes have shrunk, and you've got to be further away because the bow ratings have changed. And all these changes add costs to your construction. So I liken it to some. I think I mentioned one of my sisters was going through a construction or planning to build, and now she's gone from a four bedroom two living area to a three bedroom one living area home to what she could have got if she followed her older brother's advice 6 months ago. But now she's and that's what a lot of these people are going to have to do. They're going to have to chop and change if they want to stay there. And as you say, Martin, the bigger question is why the hell would you want to stay there when historically these are flood areas or prone to a natural course of events that would happen cyclically, whether it be every 5 years, whether it be every 10 years, every 25 years. But it's only because of the bullshit or the BS that unsuspected newcomers into the market are fed. And they get told, worst case scenario, the insurance will cover you. No, the insurance won't cover you because a lot of these properties are insured not necessarily for replacement value. If there is a replacement value, there is a set figure. And that's if a lot of these people updated those figures. What you could get billed for without considering changes to the planning, the local council planning mandates, you could build, and if you just looked at economics, what you could build for 200,000 before, now it would cost you 400,000. And again, that's the, if you were able to build it. But if you're going to build something of that nature, of what they've lost, I'd say the costs have escalated by, upwards of 30-40%, might even be 50%, Martin, when you start adding everything else on top. And as you say, why the hell would you want to build back in those areas?
Well, just make sure you ask those questions. I mean, the cost of insurance, as you say, is very, very high. Many people aren't insured and can't really get insurance. And of course, it's also worth bearing in mind that the spread of insurance costs will spill out to everybody who's got an insurance policy, right? Because that's how the insurance system works. So effectively, we're all going to pay, one way or the other. The other point is that the AFR article there shows that the expectation is that costs will be rising by at least 20%. I think that's understating dramatically. I think it's going to be a lot higher than that. And interestingly, I was listening to somebody the other day talking about some of the mitigations that they were talking about putting in. So they were going to basically lift properties higher, so they put them on stilts so that effectively they don't get flooded through. And they're going to actually put gas pipes and water pipes and power up so it doesn't get flooded. I mean, think of the aesthetic that you're going to be living in a village of stilts.
But I'm sure it wasn't somebody that's knowledgeable with regards to the planning. I mean, that's the aesthetics and the cost and the exposure. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's they're going to be a lot of these homes were already on let's say 1.2 meter piers. And what they're going to be up? They're going to be up upwards of three. I mean, they're even going to be higher than the Queenslanders, Martin. I mean, the Queenslanders, some of the Queenslanders, when I used to drive up to Woomba and that, I mean, I used to see some Queenslanders and looked like they were on bloody stilts. That looked like you needed a lift to get up to the front door. One of those electric escalators that the elderly need use. But they're going to go up to higher than that. It's crazy. It is absolutely crazy. And that's going to come back to, we can say all that we want. We can say and we can wish and it all looks great on paper, as I say to a lot of our clients and a lot of my friends. I say everything looks on great on paper and on glossy brochures. But at the end of the day, it'll come back to the local councils, the planning, the local planners, the planning divisions, the safety regs, everything else, and at the end of the day, they've got the last say. So and further to that, then you got the next hurdle that they've got to jump, and that is, will the bank lend you the extra that will be required in order to build what you may have had, if you can build what you may have had, which I doubt it. I dare say that a lot of the buildings are going to shrink by about 30 to 40% themselves, based on the new regs anyway. But again, so then the construction cost becomes an issue. Banks are going to be wary. Insurance companies are going to hike the premiums and so forth. It's you're better off just, I mean, I don't know. Look, I don't know what the answer is, but one thing for sure is one of the things is there has to be a regulatory body looking deeper and closer at as to what was approved in the last 10-15 years. I'd go back as far as 10-15 years and why it was approved, and basically who walked out with an Aldi or a brown paper bag from the council as a golden handshake.
Well, hopefully the inquiry will start asking some of those deeper questions, although I suspect they probably won't get very far down that route. But it is worth just reflecting that 100-year floods that come every year are not 100-year floods anymore, are they?
No, it's crazy. But like you and I have said last time, Martin, I mean, you only have to make note of the names of the suburbs in order to understand what happens here. The ponds and so forth. And you could rattle off a couple others that just describe what Badgers Creek, gives in that the nature of the topography of the landscape. I mean, Waterloo's a classic because when you look at the old planning diagrams, a lot of the sewer the sewer outlets and they used to run through that, and that's why I call it Waterloo. I'm sure.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this is going to run, I think, but it is important, and I think people need to stand back and take a cold, hard look as to what they should be doing if they're actually in that situation. And certainly there are no easy answers. I feel very, very sorry for those people who are sitting in homes that are unlivable at the moment with, you know, rubbish outside. But there is a structural question here, which is what caused it and what regulations should have been there to stop it happening, right? And the short answer is councils decided to allow building in the wrong places because it was economically sensible for them to do it from their own perspective. And now consumers and households are having to pick up the pieces, and taxpayers will as well. Somebody should be held accountable.
Oh, they need to, but they won't. You know, like everything else, Martin, that's getting worse by the week. No controls to the fuel and energy costs and food shortages and so forth. No real planning. Everybody else, when I say everybody else, you know, the Eastern Bloc, you know, the Asian countries, like, you know, particularly China, they've been getting ready for a long time, and yet we've been, you know, our governments have been, or the Western governments have been sitting back and disputing, what pronoun you're going to have in between your, you know, between your middle name and your last name, if you've got a middle name, and so forth, and dictating as to, you know, who's going to do this or do that. That's irrelevant to our standard of living. And everybody else is, you know, the other side of the fence has been getting ready and increasing the storage of food and preparing, as you and I've been talking about, for since 2020, they're being mandated. Yeah, prepare for war, prepare for famine. And is that what we're going to walk into? Are we going to walk into a global recession? Are we about to walk into potentially a global depression? Who knows? But from some of the reports that I've been reading today, from early this morning, with what's happening in Ukraine and Russia, I mean, the president of Ukraine is saying if talks break down, he's calling World War III already. I mean that's just hearsay. That's just people's opinions off the cuff. But I'm sure they know something more that we don't know. And at the end of the day, is what we're told the truth? Because it seems to be night and day with everything that comes that comes our way, and with everything that we're told now, it's like we're living in this dystopian world. It's two worlds. It's just getting crazier by the week.
Well, that's right. And the chances are that the pressures on China will force further decoupling of China from the West, and maybe still in alignment with Putin or something. All of those things, are very concerning. But tell me this: what's the WeChat chatting about? Are they on the same page here, or are they somewhere else?
Well, look, this is the interesting thing. I posted a video on Twitter a couple of days before the president of the United States had his conversation or had his talks with Xi Jinping, and I shared it with you. It is in Chinese, but the basic thread is that he's saying there is, and this is before the talks, from a couple of days ago. So I shared this about 4 or 5 days ago on Twitter, and this is what was being presented over there in mainland China. And what he's basically saying is, the what's going to be imposed, if things are going to be imposed on China or the Eastern Bloc, they're saying it's a two-way street. So it was basically a warning to the US, and putting them on notice, so they're more or less saying, leave us alone, let us do things in a way that we're not going to get dragged into it, but if we are, they're prepared. to move with their own sanctions and so forth. And pretty much that's what they said. Yeah, sanctions are a two-way street. Now, my take from that, my takeaway from that is the fact that we, as in Australia, sit very in a very, very precarious position, because we're the ones that would bear the brunt of any backlash from China. And quite frankly, even up to lunchtime today, from some of the stuff that was coming out of mainland China and some of the stuff on the mainstream media there and on the social media platforms there, that we get to to go through, they're not very happy. They're not very positive about Australia, and as I say, we're not a very big market to China. Yes, they do buy our iron ore, they do buy our coal, but as I've said, they've got options. They won't be able to attack as quickly to get the other options because of issues that they've got in Africa, issues that they've got in South America as well. But they will be able to attack nevertheless, and it doesn't take a lot to really bring us down to our knees, because we're already hamstrung as it is. So a few less ships coming in with cargo, and we'll be feeling it. So that's the general consensus there with China. And look, the overall threat of that is that they're really looking to continue to really decouple from the West. They don't like what they see, what's going on. And as I said, with all these fluffy political BS that the West has been caught up with, and all this wokeness and everything else, they don't like it. Quite simply, they don't see a future for the world moving in that direction. That's their view, but I think it's going to have huge ramifications on us. If things get a lot steamier, a lot hotter between the East and the West, and if they have to step in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and just a small example, of course, Australia has now said they're not going to send the bauxite, which is the aluminium ore, to Russia, right? Now, of course, that means that essentially we are cutting our nose off to spite our face again, because, of course, that is an export that won't now happen. Maybe they can find another market for it. But the more that we actually turn off the tap on things, it's a boomerang. It comes back to hit us, right? And I think that's probably what the whole Chinese thing was about. It is a two-way street. You can't take these dramatic steps without some blowback.
Yeah, and even some even a lot of the stuff that Tarek talks about with regards to Russia and the Ukraine and what they supplied the rest of the world with, and now that's pretty much come to a halt, and that's only going to people sort of think, oh well, things haven't changed as much. I can still go down to local Bunnings, and I can still go down the local store and get fertilizer, or get this, or get that. They don't realize that, that's not how supply chain issues work. They unfold over a period of time. Hence the reason why you and I have been saying to our followers from over 2 years when all this started to unfold, we're saying prepare, 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 because the worst is yet to come. Even these damn carrots and veggies that we've been trying to grow, we've had issues, learning curves. And they take a bloody long time to grow and mature, and that. So it's a learning curve. But so you don't just put a seed in the ground and pop, it comes out a tomato or a pumpkin or or carrots or corn. It takes time, and then you've got you got 6-8 weeks of continuous rain. And everything that you've put in the ground or toiled to produce something, it all just goes to the proverbial caca because of all the issues related to that. So it's all learning curve. So sooner than later, we are going to feel it. But I think we're feeling it already. But it's taken, unfortunately, a lot of people for the mainstream to really pick up on what we've been talking about for over 2 years. In this market, it's it's only been in the last 3 months that it would appear from my circles that people are saying, oh shit, yeah, this is going to happen, or that's going to happen. And I'm saying, if you're not prepared right now, and if you're not getting prepared, well, what are you waiting for? Because things aren't going to get any easier, and things aren't going to get any your lifestyle isn't going to get any cheaper.
No, that's right. I think hopefully people who've been following us will be already taking steps to prepare. And what about the local WeChat chatters? Because they're still thinking property, aren't they?
Very much so, Martin, because the biggest platforms that that we're on here, in the groups, not so platforms in the groups, it's a WeChat groups, the biggest ones, the investment ones we're on. The chatter there is very, very heavy around the buying property through your self-managed super fund. Now, we're going to be talking about super funds buying property in one of the articles today, but this is totally different. This is not in relation to that. This is more, they're talking and the chatter is very hot around self-managed super funds, and they're steering well away from businesses and from apartments, as you and I've been sharing in the past. But the chatter around that has just amplified 10 times, and now they're all putting together special purpose vehicles with a super fund, self-managed super funds in order to go heavy on purchasing homes that are on generous parcels of land. When I say generous, anything over 450 square meters nowadays is considered to be generous. So they're looking at more established homes, a little bit further out, because that's where the value is. And unfortunately, a lot of buyers and first-time buyers, they don't see that. They want to go into these new, fandangled, cookie-cutter suburbs and areas where the blocks are 320 square meters, and you run out your back door, the back door, and you break your nose in the back fence. It's just one of those things. But totally different, 180 degrees from what some of the local first-time buyers look for, and some of the people are looking for. They see more value, as I said, in land, established homes. They know what they're going to get. They know the demographics that can understand, that look at the suburbs, understand what it is, how it's changing, because they also understand that the rental market in a lot of these suburbs in the outskirts is very, very strong.
Yeah, it is very interesting, and I'm fascinated by the bifurcation between houses and apartments. But it's also true in the numbers too. If you look at the numbers, they're still going mad, aren't they?
It's crazy. And I've shared the last 3 Mondays as to how the numbers have been rising. They're there. I try to take a snapshot of them at the same time on the Monday to give me an idea, as we can do when we do our rent. And I've shared the three from the Monday the 14th. This is morning. This is the afternoon screen. The changes there, and also in today's. And what was interesting about the numbers, Martin, is they've been coming up. Regularly, consistently for the last 4 or 5 weeks. Yep. But when I say going up, on average about 250 to 300 new listings per week or coming on to replace those that come off. So the numbers have been rising by about, say, on average about 250 to 300 across the board. But last week was an eye opener, because last week, Martin, it just really caught my attention. I think we got over 700 listings from the beginning to the end. Come on, and we spoke about that. We said that the previous week, we said that the following 2 weeks is going to be pay very close attention, because that's going to more or less start dictating what the sentiment is going to be like moving forward. And you mentioned about your surveys and what people have been saying in your surveys with regards to offloading their old investment properties that are going to be costing a lot of money to fix in order to comply with the new regulations, which is something that I've been hearing a lot in the industry as well, and been talking about from the chatter that I have with the industry. So that was rather we knew how it was going to be unfolding, but even caught me by surprise as to to try get almost three times as many as the previous weeks. And you know what, Martin, I dare say that this week is could well be the outcome could well be the same as last week's.
But there's a an interesting factor. As listings go up, those properties that do come to market, we're going to see the prices get weaker, aren't they?
Very much so, and that's what we're that's what we're seeing, and we've been sharing that. Those that follow us on Twitter, we try to share a lot about that, and it's something that you and I've been talking about. When the articles discuss about the auction clearance rates and so forth, and what's that, and the mainstream media try to pump the numbers up. But although they talk about percentages, we talk about numbers, and the real numbers are twofold. One is the number that the price value that's going down that people are prepared to accept in order for the homes to be sold because they're also they don't want to stay on market and drop anymore. And the others, obviously, that we pay very close attention to is the numbers on market, because that puts further downward pressure on the existing listing. So sooner than later, and as the sentiment continues to unfold, we're going to see that even the better homes in the suburbs are going to start waning in their values, as opposed to the ones that are dropping greater in values in both in asking as well as in concluded sale prices, are the ones that are not as polished. But the ones that are polished still get a bit of attention, more attention obviously than others, and there's still a bit of a heat or emotion there, albeit because people have got the money to buy them, and they don't want to have any ongoing issues with renovations or anything else, and they just want something to turnkey, open the door, move in, put the furniture in, and that's it. Lock the door behind them and keep the world outside. They've got all the bells and whistles, the pools, all the new spanky things in the in the kitchen and in en suites and everything else, and they don't have to worry about it any further. So they're prepared to pay that bit extra for the lifestyle. But across the board, even Domain put out an article today with how 1 in 10 Sydney homes for sale in February were discounts. But you and I have been talking about this live. It's been we've been sharing about the discounted prices, the accepted discounted prices, as it's been unfolding.
Absolutely, yes. Well, we talk about statistics, and yes, folks, statistics is the right word. Somebody asked me whether I mispronounced it the other day. for example, it's also worth looking at Tarek's data, right? Which, because Tarek basically gives us information on clearance rates, right? And guess what? Clearance rates in Sydney and in Melbourne are both significantly down on last year. So that's another signal, right, to what's going on. And so the question is, will people adjust their prices to get a quick sale because they're concerned about what's going to happen? Or will they hold the line and not, accept any reduction, and then the price means that the sale doesn't happen? So it's a very interesting dynamic going on against the back cloth of higher listings and higher listings. So, prices will continue to slide.
Look, and you and I said that there are people that that have to sell. The retirees. A large majority of the retirees have to sell because it's costing them too much to maintain. They may have other assets as well, other investment properties. So that are means tested. Your personal, your principal place of residence isn't means tested, but there are other things, other factors that would impact their income, and they want to have the lifestyle. So they want to get out earlier and to get things renovated, to get things done, to achieve a higher price. May not necessarily be within their reach, and they've already maxed it because they've been sitting on in this home for 20, 30, 40 years, who knows, maybe even longer. So we see that still yet to impact the market, and I can see more of that coming. You got your downsizers, obviously, that want to get out, and now we're going to have In a lot of areas, the like the Shire, I believe, is going to be impacted by a lot of the small business operators, because I know that seem to think that that's where a lot of small business owners, gravitated towards to live. Now, maybe I may be wrong, but historically, that's where I got the feel from previous. Things that I've read. So it's just one of these things that I feel that the people that have lost out in the with regards to the businesses that have been impacted, they're going to start considering downsizing or moving away. So that's another batch of properties yet to come on the market. And then of course the biggest portion, the biggest numbers that are going to come on market is going back to the rental properties, that it just costs too much to maintain. It just doesn't make any sense. If they've maxed out, it gets to a point where when you start having to deal with structural issues and the cost of materials and everything else going up, it just doesn't make sense to hold. You've got to, that will be selling. And a lot of people are holding not only one, but people that are being in the property market that are holding a lot of these listings in a lot of the older suburbs. They may hold not only one, but two or three or four. So they're making those decisions because at the end of the day, they've got to make their lifestyle changes as well. And wherever they want to retire to or move to isn't getting any cheaper by what's being presented to them on prima facie, on face value, such as your Queenslands, your North, your North Coast, or or even down by where you live, man. People are looking at when they're making those lifestyle changes, sea changes or whatever the change they want to make, they can also see that those prices are running away on them. So they're going to be selling. So I just see more listings coming on, more downward pressure on vendors, and it's getting a lot better for those that want to buy in this market.
And just one other factor to bear in mind, and that is days on market. So that is how long properties are listed for. And again, the days on market is also extending. So if you want another indicator on the state of the market, how long does it take for a property to sell? And it's interesting because quite a few people say to, the property lists and sells on the day that it's listed. Well, maybe a few, but when you look at the statistics, that's not what the statistics says, is it?
No, and that's what our friend from Parapower, he shared that chart last week, and I shared it with our followers last week and on Twitter. And look, even the one that I shared with you today, Martin, for this podcast. I mean, look at the this is the back end report that we are able to obtain from CoreLogic, and look at the days on market for this home. It's been on market for 103 days as of today. Originally listed for sale at 1,000,829. Before that, when the price wasn't posted, the guide was 1.9 or thereabouts. 1.85 to 1.9 was the guide when we initially inquired on it. Then it went down to 1,000,829. It's got its issues. Then 1,790,000, and now it's below 1.6. So it just that's a reality, and so the prices are adjusted down. The longer the properties stay on market, and this is what creates a negative effect with a lot of the pent up emotional frenzy that agents created in the good times, is that properties will sell very quickly, and then all of a sudden, when properties don't sell within the first 2 weeks or 3 weeks. Everybody panics, but then I say, well, it's just that psychological, emotional tug of war that vendors and buyers tend to pay, and the agents tend to stoke that, and they know how to stoke that, and that's why I keep on saying on my Twitter feed and on our chats, just hold the line. hold it on. If it's not what you want, it's not the price that you want at the moment. The indicators are showing that more numbers are coming on market. There's more choices, and then they will, the agents, the selling agents, and the vendors will fall on their own sword, because when they don't see the property being sold in the first 21 days or 28 days, when these early auctions. They're going to start panicking, and that's when things get adjusted. So at this point, you try and buy pre-auction, and sometimes the better result comes post-auction, because that they get a reality kick in the teeth on the day of the auction, and it's easier to deal with them post-auction.
Ah, well, now you see, but the answer is, Edwin, according to the government's report that just came out last Friday, what we'll do is we'll allow people to use superannuation to go buy property. So that will solve all of the problems and allow more people to get back into the market, right? A sneaky plan. I have to say, I did a show yesterday where I basically pulled that inquiry report apart, because basically it was set up with the terms of reference that was always going to blame the states and do all these things. But this superannuation idea is just so nutty. So what we're going to do is get more and more people, more and more leveraged into property, and now you can actually leverage your superannuation into property too. So basically, even your superannuation is leveraged to property. I mean, come on.
It's crazy. It's not, as I said, in our notes, I said it's not a, it's not a super idea.
it's flawed
from all sides. So outside of what you shared on your video, because you beat me to it, because I've got to wait till Mondays. outside of what you shared, I thought I'd take this a little bit further with this prickly pear, and start looking at had a quick look at some of the key points. I look at a lot of the legal side of this stuff. So they're asking for your super to secure the loan. So first thing, the banks are sitting pretty, right? So they're the winners regardless. The losers are the partners or the single person that wants to buy the pro, and they basically hog the super and future super earnings, because the bank is taking security over your super. So is it going to legally, as your super grows, does that mean that they're going to be able to go in there and take some of that growth if there's a shortfall as well? All these things we have to navigate through. Then I started thinking about that, and as the roosters kept me up, woke me up early, keep on waking me up early in the morning, and started thinking and pondering on this. And then I'm thinking, let me just have a look and see how many relationships fail on a yearly basis in Australia. And the numbers are absolutely staggering. So then that's another conundrum. That's another prickly pear, because how do you unravel all this? It's bad enough facing the family law courts with what you consider a straightforward relationship, and then you've got to obviously you've got to have the lawyers fighting over who gets what and what and what for and so forth, and then you've got your assets all come in. But then when you start sort of throwing in super, it's into this whole mix, and after the property sold, nobody gets anything. There's going to be disputes. How do you then unsecuritize it? It is just a minefield. So the winners out of this, Martin, are the banks and the family lawyers.
Spot on. That's exactly right. And the government, because they can claim that they've allowed more people to get into the market, right? But you're absolutely right. And I always thought superannuation was there to provide you with security in old age. It was a long-term savings scheme. You basically put it in through your working life, and then you accessed it during retirement, which basically meant that the government wouldn't need to provide you with a pension, because essentially you'd have your own pension, right? But what this actually means, and just think about this, if in fact, the value of your property goes down and the superannuation is eaten up early on, basically you then have to go on the pension. So actually, what the government has done is shifted out down the road that problem to try and solve another problem, which is housing affordability. And this whole report was predicated on the problem of housing affordability. It's actually all about supply. We need more properties built. We want to make the states build more properties, et cetera, et cetera. And we want to facilitate more people getting into more debt, right? Yeah. I mean, it is ridiculous, short-sighted, crazy. And, as you say, if you basically get your superannuation messed up in the middle of a property transaction, in the middle of a divorce, how messy is that?
Oh, it's crazy. And the thing there, Martin, is the, you know, with outside of all that is, we do have an election coming up, right?
Really? You think it might have something to do with it? Yeah, it's funny that.
And the state governments, are short of a penny at the moment. Yep. So they need the stamp duty. Yep. And then the local governments need the council contributions. And the grift keeps on riding on. But on top of that, the outcome, what's the outcome? Even the mainstream are now putting it out, are talking about it. I keep on telling you, Martin, they keep on watching our shows. The outcome is very straightforward. Properties aren't going to get any cheaper. Properties are only going to get more expensive because the developers, the builders, the vendors, whether, it's a secondary or established property, they're going to say, well, you know what, you can pay more. Yeah, you can securitize your super. Yep. You got 100K in there, haven't you? So what? And agents, no doubt, will be telling and informing. You know, giving them great information. Oh, look, did you know that you could now securitize your super? And by the way, how much do you have in super again? You know, is it 100, 150? Yeah, let me do my quick calculations. And guess what? The property is no longer going to be worth a million. The property is now going to be worth $1,150,000. Because why? You can securitize it against your super as well. So things, they just really don't think about it. It's just as I keep on saying, it's just another high speed rail network coming from Brisbane to all the way to Melbourne and every township in between. It's just promises. No different to the promises of the politicians in South America, Martin. The El Presidentes in South America, when they go into the country towns and say, "If you vote for me, I will give you corn." Yeah, and the general public go, "Yay!" And then he goes, "If you vote for me, I will give you bread." You go, "Yay!" And if you vote for me, I will give you bridges. Silence, crickets. And then a local farmer puts his hands up and says, "El Presidente, we don't have any rivers. If you vote for me, I will give you rivers."
Very good, Edwin. I love it. And you're right. It will just push prices higher. But you also made the point that there's an election coming, right? And I think we can tell there's an election coming, right? Because not only was this housing affordability report published, but over the weekend they also announced that more of the Royal Commission reforms were going to be chucked out, those particularly relating to broker commissions, right? Because one of the recommendations from the Royal Commission, the Hayne Commission a little while ago, was that broker commissions basically made it very difficult to be clear about whose interests the broker was acting in, right? Now that commission review that was planned is not going to go ahead. So again, another example, just before the election, another announcement. Spot the plot.
It is. And then what's going to happen post the election? We don't know what's going to happen right now with everything that's unfolding globally, and also on a local level. It's just an unknown, and you just got to. That's why you just say approach things with caution and don't overcommit. And that's the tip of the week. And I'll share a little bit more of that. It's really, don't get tempted to overpay and overcommit, because you know, you think the government's looking after your best interests and is going to make it easier for you to maintain or keep that asset, because that's not their interest is short term. The interest is purely short term for the stamp duty, for the council contributions, you know, and all those other duties and levies that you pay on ingoing costs on the purchase, and that ain't kept, because if you have to resell, guess what? The next bunny will pay a stamp duty again on the next sale. So it's so yeah, that's a tip. Don't overcommit. And I'm going to leave you guys and the viewers with you and the viewers with this, Martin. Is so on the weekend attended an auction for a client, a couple of auctions for a client on the Sunday. So the you know, and the one of the parents came to the last auction. I had my mandate. I you know, I'm very, very specific when they mandate, and they said this is I had my budget, my limit, and that's it. Unless I get a sign off by both parties, I don't move beyond that. And you know, albeit, you know, we were in there and we worked out the strategy to, you know, cut a lot, very long story short, worked out the strategy. We're pretty much reaching our budget, and, you know, and one of the parents came up and said, oh, go 150 more. And I'm sort of looking at the old guy, and I say, you know, I say old guy with, you know, with affection. So I looked at the old guy and I just basically said, have you got that on hand? Yeah. Unless you can show me that you've got that. So what I'm trying to get at is even he got emotional.
Yeah.
About he wanted to get in there. So then when we discussed it and they settled him down, our client settled him down a bit, because he got all excited, then yeah, he's still emotional, and now his want for you know his kids to get into the first home, that emotion, then and was you know pushing me to go 150 more. That wasn't mandated to, but yeah, he was trying to push me along. Then all of a sudden, that emotion turned into anger. And then his next instructions to me were saying, yeah, just bid a little bit more and make the other bastards pay more. And I said, well, what if we end up with a property? It's crazy. So that psychological play that happens, that psychological, what would you say, that event, yeah, it's so charged. And this is why a lot of people get tempted. And you could see there's the FU bids towards the end when people just get overly emotional and they try to outbid one another and give each other the FU bid, thinking that the other ones fall away. And then they come back and it just goes you know, from logic to craziness to stupidity.
Well, that's right. And so that's why it's really important to keep a level head and to know what your limit is and know what the value is you're prepared to pay and stick to it. And you know, I always say to people, when I say it again, there's always more property around the corner.
And the way things are going, Martin, it's unfolding on a daily basis. So, yeah, look, for those that want to follow the numbers more regularly, they can follow yourself, myself, and Tarek. Yeah, we often share these things on Twitter, and they can you know get a glimpse of the shenanigans that go on in there as well with the current market situation. And how we call them out, and we try to bring some sort of stability, some sort of buffer, or you know, bring them down to a lot of the people to reality. But yeah, we can have a bit of fun; doesn't hurt. And yeah, they can follow us, and they can see, and more to the point, they can see the you know in real daily terms how the numbers are clocking up, so is that they. That fear and that awkwardness will dissipate and hopefully fall away, and they'll be able to deal with the agents on their purchases on you know from a logical standpoint and a factual standpoint rather than one that's emotive.
Absolutely. Good advice, Evan. Well, thanks once again. I always enjoy our evening conversations on a Monday. And look, there are so many important points that you've made tonight, particularly about not getting swept up, thinking about it carefully and judiciously. And, you know, with the numbers as they are, there'll be more value and more opportunity down the track. So just hold the line.
Yeah, that's it. Hold the line, Martin. Hold the line. And hold the line and somebody send me some earplugs.
Well, you have to go to bed. I don't know what will happen when they change the clocks. Have you thought about that?
I don't know. Does that mean that I'm waking up at 4:30 or 6:30? I'm happy I'll wake up at 6:30, mate.
You spring forward and fall back, right? So the clocks go back an hour.
Right? So I'm waking up at 4:30. Is that what you're saying?
Have fun. Thanks, Edwin. See you soon. Okay, cheers. Bye.